You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guy. Over here on my left, we've got the one and only Rob Arbatier.
I'm all choked up. Hello, Mike.
That's it.
That's not it.
I know, I'm just kidding.
That's not it. Although that would be enough, but it's not.
And next to him, we've got the one and only Andrew Sheps. Hi, Mike.
How are you, Andrew?
Thanks.
It's not much applause when it's just one guy doing it.
Yeah, that's all right. It's a Zen thing.
And then, no, but there's more.
There is more. And joining us from the control room, the one and only Jeremy Davis.
Hello. Hello, Jeremy.
And then we have my good friend.
Where Andrew and I, we have to be sure to clap not together.
Yeah, exactly.
So at least it sounds like two people.
And then we have my good friend, Julie Babcock, who's sitting in with us.
All right, Julie. Hey.
Well, hey, guys, we may be a small panel today, but we've got a lot of really great things to talk about.
And quality over quantity.
That's right. And the very first thing, I want to do a little bit of bragging. Great. Yeah, because right now I want to brag about one of our esteemed panel members and his three Grammy nominations.
Andrew! Woo! Andrew!
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
What were they for?
So the one where my name is actually on the nomination is for the Adele record for Album of the Year.
Nice.
So that's the one where if that wins, I will actually be the sheepish looking guy in the back on stage so my mom can say, my son was on the Grammy.
Nice.
And then she's also up for Best Pop Vocal Album, I think. And then the Chili Peppers are up for Best Rock Album. And
nice.
So those get statues to the engineers if they win.
Okay, so you are going to the Grammys this time and you will walk the red carpet.
I will absolutely walk the red carpet. Yeah. And if not, I will bring the one that you said. Kindly gave us.
Andrew one time was nominated for a Grammy and couldn't find the red carpet. So
Staples Center is round with lots of entrances. And we traversed about 300 degrees of it, and my wife was wearing tall shoes. That was it.
It's those tall shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's cool. That's great. Well, it'll be really good. And what did you do on the Adele album? You mixed a couple.
I mixed four songs on that, and on the Chili Peppers, I recorded with Greg Fiddleman. We recorded and mixed the whole record.
Nice. How was it mixing that record?
The Adele record?
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, the stuff that I mixed was all cut live with a band, and it was really organic and really cool.
Yeah, because it has a little bit of a old school vibe with just a really contemporary feel about it, you know, and it seemed like something would be really fun to mix.
Yeah. I mean,
and how, when you were mixing it, how much control did you have as far as where you wanted to take the mix? I mean,
Well, I didn't want to take it much of anything. It was really about having it just sound natural.
I see.
So there's very, very little. I mean, the first song I mixed on that, and this is with a full band and strings and her, obviously.
Right.
And I think I only had 5 EQs in on the desk.
Really?
I mean, it was that much, like, just get the balance right and leave it alone. So spent a lot of time balancing and very little time processing or any of that.
Wow. So it was really, it was recorded nice. There's a lot of nice pockets for everything to fit in really good. You didn't have to EQ the bejeebies out of anything.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What about her vocal chain? What was that like?
In terms of recording, I don't know exactly. I mean, I'm sure it was very simple. I'm sure it was an Eve Mic Pre, maybe an 1176 or something like that. And mixing, the main channel for her vocal probably had absolutely nothing on it, including no EQ. And then I sidechain a couple of different compressors to just add in a little bit of different color to it. So probably a BA6A and an 1176.
Wow.
But I don't remember using a whole lot of any of those.
Wow. So, because she has a nice little bite on her vocal. I mean, it really has this nice little cut to it.
I mean, a lot of that is her.
Really? Which is kind of refreshing, actually, that someone sounds like they are being recorded.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's all me. No, I mean, so it wasn't necessarily super easy to mix, but it was very much just about balance. You know, I did very little. on that?
Well, you know, and sometimes that in and of itself is the hardest part of a mix.
Yeah, because you're not relying on compressors to take care of things for you. I mean, it was really a tenth of a dB on certain things, and it's not as good. And there's a lot of really tweaky kind of getting it right. But once it was right, it just sort of all fell into place. And
that's almost kind of like it would remind me of like an old school, like an Earth, Wind & Fire type of a vibey mix, you know, like some of the early stuff where the whole band was playing and they, you know, you got to maintain the integrity of the whole thing, but just worry about the balance.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously there was more isolation than that on these tracks. It wasn't just everyone live in the room with a couple of mics, but it felt that way. Yeah, very much a performance, and all the dynamics were in the playing, and, you know, you're not creating stuff.
When you were working on it, did you know that it was going to be what it turned out to be?
Yeah, you never know.
Really?
Do you? You know that she's super popular anyway.
Right.
And her first album was still on the charts, I think, when this came out. But no, I mean, you never know it's going to be like that. I mean, it's always like playing the lottery.
I know. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, there's something about her music, though. I think she has such a refreshingly, you know, original sound about her that has a little bit of, pays homage to, you know, days gone by, but yet it's very still contemporary, and you can.
People love that record.
Yes, it's a great record. Well, that's great. Yeah. That's good. And then the Chili Peppers, like you said, you tracked and you mixed that one.
Yeah.
And that was that mostly done out here in LA, or was that done all over the place? Or?
No, it was all done out here. They tracked it all in a studio in Hollywood, and then we overdubbed in Hollywood and Malibu, and then I mixed it at my place. And Greg mixed some of his stuff, I think, at Sunset.
Now, on an album like that, how long do you spend tracking something like that? I mean, are you...
Well, it depends. I mean, they're prolific, so they recorded way more songs than made the record. Like probably three or four times as many songs as made the record.
Really?
So we spent a ton of time recording. But if we'd only worked on the songs that were on the record, I don't know, it would have been a few weeks. You know, because it all went quickly, but it was just a phone book of songs.
Wow. So, and then they just start cutting songs left and right and get it from 32 down to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but we didn't finish overdubs on everything, but we had finished vocals on every single song they did. So they were all sort of ready to do final guitars if there were going to be more guitars and things like that. But we got very far along on every song because otherwise they couldn't tell.
Right.
You know, you can't really pare it down if you don't know what the vocal's going to be and things like that.
So. No, that's true. And final question is, how much credit do you give the podcast for your success?
All okay. It all begins right here.
See? Yeah. Great. Well, you know, we'll just keep our fingers crossed. And the Grammys are when? Like in February, right?
Yeah, February. I don't remember. Second week, I think.
I do not know.
It's after the Super Bowl. So.
You're keeping our streak alive, though, of awards for the podcast. Because Bobby always gets nominated for his daytime Emmys, although that's not going to happen anymore. So we're going to be relying on you to keep the streak going.
Well, but isn't he? Is it Susan Lucci? Is that who?
Yeah,
he's the Susan. He is
the Susan Lucci of
daytime Emmys, so.
Daytime music composition.
Yeah, because he's been nominated. Wow, like it seems like every year for like the past 5 years.
And has he never won?
No.
Mm.
It's February 12th.
Wow,
February 12th.
Look at that.
See, and Jeremy thought he wasn't going to have anything to add to the conversation.
All right. Well, good luck. And February 12th, we'll all be thinking about you, looking
well,
for you.
Well, thank you very much.
You know what? I want her to win just to see you walk up on stage. I think that would be awesome. And then do me a favor. Just put your hands up in a big Y just so you know that, you know.
Wait, because he won't recognize me otherwise?
No, it'll be our little secret signal. No one else will pick
up
on.
Yeah, it'd be very secret.
Subtle.
Yeah. I'll do the whole YMCA thing, actually. No, I'll just be standing in the back so my mom can see me. You know.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
I already know you're going to do a total Kanye West thing as soon as Adele starts to talk. You're going to like dive out in front, grab the mic. Adele's album was greatest album this year. No, I see it already. Maybe not. Maybe not.
That's by nature.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Maybe not.
All right. Well, hey, there's a few things I want to talk about before we get into the meat and potato of the podcast. And first thing is, did you guys hear that Gibson was acquiring Staton and KRK? Gibson guitar.
Well, that'll be the end of that.
Exactly. I mean, come on.
Have they maybe ever, not. Maybe not. They do seem to buy and destroy companies. They, so.
I've never forgiven them for Opcode and that whole thing.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't.
I mean, I don't know. That just does not bode well for either one of those. So if you have KRKs, buy another set because they're not going to be around.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know companies have to kind of, you know,
die?
Adapt.
Oh, or die. That's not the word you were looking for.
And they just got nailed by that whole, you know, exotic wood thing that they were, you know, got busted for. The, what is it? The
I don't know about that.
Well, Fender. Wasn't that Fender?
No, it was Gibson. It was Gibson guitars.
All right.
Basically, they were, because of some weird environmental treaties, all this wood, they were saying that it was illegal for them to have imported these exotic woods for their guitars.
Oh.
Anyway, so I guess they got to pay for that somehow. So they buy a company so they can, I don't know, sell it, destroy it. I don't see it. I don't see what good can
And was the first one Stanton?
Yeah.
Okay.
DJ.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. See what happens.
They're both
there.
Odd fits, but so was Opcode. I mean,
and look what happened.
Look what happened to it. Have they ever? I mean, they bought a lot of companies.
Well, Oberheim, right? They bought Oberheim. I think they were the last ones to have Oberheim
were
before.
They? That
worked
out well.
There was something else too. Oh, well, Pinnacle, or was that Opcode? What was the deal? Pinnacle bought a company that then Gibson bought that someone else bought, and I don't remember.
Pinnacle bought.
Well, Pinnacle is Avid. That's the video thing.
Now it is, but Pinnacle had bought Steinberg, right?
Was that was the Steinberg?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all just very confused.
Yeah, it's hard to acquisitions and mergers. Yeah, but I can't think of a single one that has benefited from that.
Not with that management group. There's other management groups that buy companies all the time, and they work out really well. But I think of the ATI group that bought API, and that is
that
really,
worked out
right.
You know what? Really a lot of times it's just. It's that they're just trying to get the talent and the people, and they're willing to let the products die. So they could be just buying the companies to gut them of the talent, and they're planning to kill it.
Right.
I don't know if that's what the deal was with Opcode, but the Opcode engineers did end up working on other products, not under the Opcode name.
Hmm. The only thing I can think of is they want to have a stronger consumer presence because Stanton has a very big consumer presence, especially with like their turntables, the USB turntables, things like that. So maybe they're working their way into that market somehow or want to make a presence.
Well, it's where the money is, so
yeah,
they'd be silly not to.
Either way, if you have KRKs, I'd still buy another pair. you know. Well, moving on from that little bit of information, guys, we got a response that I want on our Facebook page to our last show number 112. And it's from one of our listeners who's actually really cool, so don't be attacking this guy. But his name is Shannon Newman. And I'm going to read the post because I want your opinion.
Okay.
Okay. I am an avid listener to the podcast. Pardon the pun. But sometimes wonder if Rob is on Avid's PR payroll. Stop. Don't say anything yet. I have yet to get giddy over Pro Tools 10. There's nothing new that hasn't been done on other DAWs. As a studio owner, I have to have a Pro Tools rig. I do music, not post. It may be a California thing, but here in Tennessee, I see 35 to 40% of stuff tracked on stuff other than Pro Tools. You guys sometimes seem really sheltered. 32-bit floating point and 64-bit mix engines have been out for several years. Avid didn't invent it. Pro Tools 10 seems to be a traditional release, and at 1K to upgrade my rig, I am not much of an Avid fan these days. I feel that they are raping their customers to finance their development to 64-bit platform. Sorry, that's my opinion, but I feel victimized. ... Laugh. LOL.
Well, at least he's in a good mood about it. Now, I missed the discussion, but I'm sure I know exactly what everybody said, and
I mean, on a regular basis, I point out that the stuff that's coming to Pro Tools now is stuff that Nuendo has had for a really long time and that Waveframe had before that. And I always point out, you know, Waveframe was 24-bit and had real-time fades in 1986.
Right.
And I'm definitely not on the, you know, receiving PR dollars for Pro Tools or anything. As a matter of fact, I always talk about the fact that I still do all my MIDI in Cubase and other software. The thing is, Pro Tools 10, there's some under-the-hood stuff that's for the future, the same way Snow Leopard had a lot of under-the-hood stuff for the future. But there are a few things in Pro Tools 10 that a lot of people are excited about. The clip-based gain, the buffering of the way the audio is buffered.
Yep.
There's some really cool stuff in there. I agree the pricing is a little crazy and out of left field, and there are a lot of people up in arms about that. But, you know, Pro Tools, at least out here, Pro Tools is the 800-pound gorilla. You have to have it if you're going to be interchanging with anybody else.
Right.
It sounds like in Tennessee the percentages are different. And in Europe the percentages are different. I mean, it's depending where you go in the world, different sequencers and audio systems are in the lead. But basically in our world out here, it has to be Pro Tools. And there are a lot of things about Pro Tools that other DAWs still do that Pro Tools doesn't do, and I'm sure they'll get to it eventually.
Right.
And we never pretend that this stuff didn't exist before Pro Tools 10 with other DAWs.
See, and that's what I actually said in my reply on actual Facebook.
What I have to do is go back and listen to some of these discussions.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't think it – but it's not to do with that. I mean, the Pro Tools 10 release and the pricing for the Pro Tools 10 release are two totally separate issues. So just taking the software itself – yeah, okay, fine. Reapers had that since 1604.
Right.
You know, but the thing that Pro Tools has, at least to me as an engineer who makes records where I have to track bands, is that it has the usability that allows me to make records and track bands, which a lot of the other DAWs don't. And there are people who make records in them that are amazing. So it's not like you can't make a record in Logic or Cubase or Nuendo. But I have never been on a session with other software that has worked as well as Pro Tools works for doing the basic stuff. So therefore, adding on top of that some of the cool new stuff that, okay, maybe they're catching up, but the clip-based gain, real-time fades, and loading the timeline into memory save me hours each day. So therefore, it's a good upgrade if you're going to use Pro Tools.
Right.
If you just want to make the argument that all these other DAWs have all this stuff, well, then use them. It's fine. I mean, there's no reason you have to use Pro Tools as long as you can interchange with other people. And Pro Tools with OMFs, I mean, you can do it. It's possible. So either you're going to argue that I have to use Pro Tools because that's what everybody uses. Well, in that case, you kind of better get on the bandwagon a little bit and try to find the good stuff. Now, that all of that aside, the pricing is insane. And I will speak well for Avid in any context because I actually know a ton of people there and I think they do a really good job at some of the stuff they do. But this pricing is pure idiocy. And I know probably 50 people who do what I do who will not upgrade because they can't afford it.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's not an exaggerated number.
Right.
I mean, that's 50 personal friends who will not upgrade because they can't afford it. It has nothing to do with the feature set.
Right.
So
I totally agree with you in the respect of that the pricing is insane. But on the other hand, you know, what Shannon was saying about they were basically using this as a transitional upgrade. Well, it is. It's a transitional upgrade. They've even said so much because they're going to be transitioning away from, you know, TDM plugins. They're going to be transitioning away from a lot of different things. So this is definitely hardware. This is the last version that's going to support a ton of hardware. It's all going to have to be upgraded after that.
And it's definitely not transitionally priced.
Right.
No, but and just really quickly on the hardware, to be fair, they're just not going to test the old I.O., but they're not doing anything will break it. I mean,
I understand that.
Rob's still using I.O. from
the 60s.
I told him. He did.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay, but just...
That's not, you're right. I mean, it's going to be, you know, they're just not, you're right, like you're saying, they're not going to be testing it, and it's not going to be officially supported, though. It's going to be on the backside.
Yeah. You know what? I'm still using my ADAP bridges. They still work. Yeah.
But having said that, you know, in today's economy, I'm okay with... I'm even okay. Listen, I'm right there with you, Shannon. I mean, I have a Pro Tools 7 rig that I got to upgrade, and I didn't even go to 8. And so, you know, I'm looking at dropping 10 grand to upgrade my system, and I got to get a computer too. But having said that, you know, they need to finance – somehow they need to keep the money coming in so they can finance the R&D to move and do bigger and better things. So essentially, Pro Tools is going to price what we're going to pay, and we're going to pay what Pro Tools, what Avid is going to price at. That's just the way it works. And considering what you're doing, the Pro Tools HD, and the fact that you don't necessarily even have to be locked into their hardware anymore – I can kind of see a justification for what they charge. Now, are there other software DAWs out there that are cheaper and that do the same job? Absolutely, you know. But if you're going to stay with Pro Tools, if you're going to stay with the 800-pound gorilla out here, you're going to have to pay the price. And I think, you know, I'm going to have to eventually just swallow it and pay the price.
Yeah, I do say, and I have said to everybody I know at Avid that that pricing is insane, though.
Yeah, I mean,
it takes nothing into account, and it doesn't. They would make more money selling it for less because more people would buy it. There are lots of people who will not upgrade because they can't.
Well, see, I think they got themselves in this problem when they came out with 9 and the way the pricing structure was for 9, because it was such an easy upgrade to go from 8. To 9, you know, it was hundreds of dollars, and people were just used to the hundreds, and then, you know, $600.
Well, but like it's that. Also, it's not, I mean, it's not a matter of what are people used to paying for Pro Tools upgrades. It's what are people used to paying for DAW software upgrades. Right. There's nobody else charging anywhere near that. So.
But, you know, I have to, and I can't believe I'm defending them, but, you know, when you get into.
You're going to get another email from Shannon. It's your turn.
But when you get into big boy toys, you know, you pay a lot of money for what it does. I mean, you look at – go into the 3D graphics world, you know. Every point release for like – I use Modo. Modo is a 3D program. Every point release for Modo, it's $400. Boom. Just
you know what,
to upgrade.
That's true, but you have to think about the context. Pro Tools – they've been coming out with Pro Tools upgrades for many, 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 many years. And in this economy and with this few number of major features for most people – it's hard to stomach an upgrade that costs so much more than previous upgrades.
Well, how much was Pro Tools 9 coming from 8? How much was that upgrade for HD?
It was hundreds. It wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, was it like $400 or $500?
I don't even think it was that. It was probably like
$399.
Yeah, $300 or so.
Yeah, that's what I'm pretty sure it was $400.
Yeah, $300 to $400.
I mean, and it's purely arbitrary, but in my head, $600 if it's a major upgrade, you go, it's a little bit more, but okay. But it's like having, you know, the 99-cent store is not the dollar store for a really good reason, too. There are numbers that make sense, and $1,000 for a software upgrade makes no sense to people, as well as, I think, being incredibly overpriced. And if the company's in trouble and needs the money, I want them to get the money they need, because if they go away,
right,
I'm screwed.
Right.
But that's not the way to go.
No, I totally understand it's expensive and it's going to be – I mean, I haven't done it yet. You know, for me, I'm going to be working on, LE for a long time because I won't move
right.
until I have
well,
to
Well, and your upgrade's going
to
be $300 then, which
right.
is awesome.
And yeah, which it will still do. But there's going to be a time where I'm going to have to bite the bullet and hopefully they'll make it cheaper. But I can see them – if they need to do that, if that's where they're doing it. And listen, Avid as a company has not been doing that well. I mean, they're –
no.
Video systems has been – they've been taking a hit, and even their prosumer stuff hasn't been selling as well as they would have liked to. And even like stuff like what's their consumer? Their Pinnacle, right?
Yeah.
Julie used to be a technical editor for a Video Maker magazine. That's why. What was – did you
no, one, no one listening to the podcast could tell that you had turned to her. Though,
no,
you know.
But that's why I was, yeah. But in the video world – Did you hear much about Avid and their prosumer stuff, their consumer stuff? How big were they?
Oh, people love Pinnacle.
Really?
Yeah. It's affordable and does what – I mean, in the intermediate level of editing, you know?
Right. So the like serious hobbyist and wedding videographer?
Right.
That level.
Right.
Okay, so maybe they're not hurting that much.
Well, no, I mean, I think they are hurting.
Yeah.
But you can't take that out on – an audio software
no,
upgrade.
I know.
Well, let me – can I dive in one more time?
Sure.
Because I just have to defend myself to Shannon.
Absolutely.
One last point. Everyone should realize – I mean, you guys know, but everybody out there should realize in my studio, I'm sort of an equal opportunity user of stuff. I try to stay on top of every platform and keep them all current and learn how to use them all. read all the manuals front to back and try to make the decision based on the merits of the product for each project. And yeah, Pro Tools is the way I have to interchange with everybody, whether it's music or post. It's sort of a no-brainer. People don't even ask anymore, do you have Pro Tools? It's just assumed you do. And we do. But in that conversation we had on the last podcast, some of my brethren were sort of dumping on Pro Tools 10, not the price of it, but, you know, it doesn't really do much new. And, you know, we're going to have this problem with, you know, hardware going away. And there was a lot of negative talk from people who had not actually used it. And I sort of felt the need to balance out the conversation. It wasn't so much defending Avid, but it was just balancing it out because I have actually used it.
Right.
And some of the things that were being thrown out there were sort of innuendo that you hear a lot out in the marketplace. So it's a valid point. You know, everybody's hearing the same rumor mill stuff, and you have a lot of dealers saying, we don't know how we're going to sell this thing at this price. And you have a lot of people saying, well, this is, you know, not a lot of features for the price and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, a lot of that stuff, there is some truth to it, but there was some positive stuff to say about 10 too, and no one else was saying it. So I became the defender the same way I would if it was the opposite. If everybody was saying it was great, I'd be the one trying to balance it out, saying, well, here's what's not great about it. Because, you know, our point here is to try to present a balanced view.
But the reality about working with 10 versus 9 is that the RAM caching and real-time fades make you feel like you bought a new computer.
Absolutely.
It is that much faster. And if you haven't used it, you have no idea what you're talking about. You can't read the stuff on a piece of paper and go, that's not much.
And I will say this. I'm maybe there is one, but I don't know of another DAW that does that.
No. That's really
not a major one anyway. Maybe.
Which part?
The part where it
– the RAM caching.
It loads all your – disk data into RAM, and then you're playing out of RAM.
Yeah.
And it's so fast.
Just the fact that you can now use slower, cheaper hard drives to
About you can open up a session off a thumb drive that's 40 tracks of 96K, give it a second to load up, and play it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Or off a server. That's what's crazy at work. They pull down mix sessions from the server now. And
I don't know any other platform that does that.
Yeah.
Score One.
So it is a little bit beyond, you know, whatever the shareware program that's had a feature called that is. And I'm not denigrating the other platforms.
No, I know.
But for me, I need Pro Tools to make records because that's the way I make records. I would go back to tape before I would switch to Logic. Right. And if people go, oh, yeah, right. Well, no, actually I would because I've had so many problems trying to do records in Logic just personally, the way it deals with audio and the fact that what's on the screen is not necessarily what you hear.
Right.
Just crazy stuff. So it's really important to me that it works. So I'm always going to defend it as much as I can.
Okay, now, Rob, now you have to defend Logic to get the other side.
I'll defend Logic. Logic serves a real purpose to make you realize how good the other drums are.
Actually,
Logic's timing is really good for drums and stuff. Yeah. I will say that.
And I think that with the price discussion,
there
are a lot of people who point to Logic and say, well, but you can get Logic brand new out of the box with all these loops, whatever, for $600 or $300 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But they are also subsidized by their hardware in a way that Avid is not.
Right.
So, yeah. But $1,000 is too much for a software.
No, I agree. And believe me, as a consumer, I'm right there with you, Shannon. And it pains me. And I don't know what my upgrade strategy is going to be other than someday upgrade. But we'll see what happens.
I'll tell you this. I'm really happy that Shannon and others like Shannon, you said we had other emails about the same topic. I'm glad that you guys feel the need to write about this stuff because the conversation is what's going to actually drive companies like Avid to change their thinking in the future. I mean, they have to be market driven like every other company.
That's true.
And, you know, you should probably spend some time, and this is out to everybody, you should spend some time with Pro Tools 10 before you just immediately say, no, it's not enough for the money. Make a decision. Try to make a decision based on having used the thing, not just on what you've heard about it.
Now, really, go ahead.
Actually, one last thing. The free trial is supposed to come out soon. They talked about that a long time ago, that if you are a customer that wants to try Pro Tools, there's a 30-day free trial that's coming out, but I think it keeps getting delayed or something. But it's coming out soon, says one of an inside source.
Nice, nice. One thing I wanted to, before we take a break, I wanted to ask you guys, how did Pro Tools become kind of like the de facto standard more so than some of the other platforms. I mean, I have a couple of theories, but I wanted to hear why you thought it happened that way.
I have some pretty strong feelings about how it happened, because in the old days when dinosaurs roamed the earth, there were things like Synclaviers and Fairlights and Waveframes that all cost multi-hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
And were awesome tools for the time. You used to need a refrigerator-sized computer to be able to do any real processing. So those were the tools that people were using. And that was sort of at the beginning of my career and the beginning of Andrew's career. It's what we sort of started on. While that was all going on during the late 80s into the 90s, DigiDesign was starting to percolate with very inexpensive, relatively inexpensive products. I always laugh when now Pro Tools is thought of as the expensive option, because back in those days, Pro Tools was always the cheap
product. That was ghetto. Totally ghetto.
Totally ghetto. And Andrew adopted it way, way, way before I did. I was more of a snob. But what happened is those other companies, for all different reasons, just kind of imploded and died.
Right.
Actually, with similar reasons. They were all overpriced in a market that wasn't going to pay that anymore. Pro Tools was coming out with better and better hardware, better and better software. And even though the feature set, and this Andrew and I used to talk about this all the time, the feature set was not what some of these other systems were.
Right.
But it was good enough. And good enough means something in the market. You could do really good work with it. And your client didn't care whether you were missing this feature or that feature. Like, real-time fades is something that Waveframe had back in 86, 87. You know, Pro Tools now finally has that. But we're talking about, you know, a 25-year spread.
Right.
But that doesn't matter. You know, yeah, it's worse to do it the way Pro Tools used to do it. But it didn't matter. It was good enough. Everybody got used to it, and it was fine. And that was the thing about Pro Tools. Everything about it was really good enough. And there was no one else sort of standing in line with hardware and software when the big behemoth platforms died.
Right.
There was no one standing there to sort of take over, and Pro Tools was the perfect price point.
Yeah.
And so it was a logical choice.
You know, did you want to say something?
Well, I can go after you.
One thing that I kind of got started about the same time as Pro Tools kind of got started. And I remember I was working with Teddy Riley at the time when I first got my first sound tools system and card, and we were looking at that. But it seemed to me that what happened was with the Synclaviers and some of the SSL actually had a digital picture editor and for sound. I think what happened was you had these companies that had the Ferrari mindset, that they were the Ferraris, they were priced like the Ferraris, and it was basically we were asking them to try to make a compact car, and I don't think they could have. And you have this little DigiDesign that kind of started at the bottom and worked its way up. I think it's always harder to go up and go down than it is to go from the bottom working their way up. And I think one thing that happened is when Pro Tools finally did take over, you had some great products like Cubase and Nuendo. I mean, Nuendo tried for a couple of years really hard to kind of get into that post market and kind of break into the whole post-production. But the hardware wasn't there yet for them. You know, it just wasn't it didn't fit into a post-house environment.
They didn't know how to market their software either.
And the other thing too is there was some market confusion between the Nuendo and the Cubase and what one was.
There still
and
is. Wasn't.
And yeah, exactly. And time code, you know, you had all the 2997, 2398, well, not 2398, but 2997 drop frame. And you had all the film and TV time codes in one. And you didn't have them in the other. There was just a lot of confusion. And I think they blew it when they didn't streamline back then, because that was actually a really great product. It's just there was a lot of market confusion and they didn't have the hardware to compete.
That hasn't changed much. It's still
compete.
Basically that way. What were your thoughts, Andrew?
Well, just to go back, like step back a little bit to why is Pro Tools so ubiquitous and how did it get there? First of all, it was positioned well and the timing was good and there, you know, a lot of happy accidents. But it's also, I mean, anyone who's done a lot of work in any of these programs, and this goes to video editing, it goes to anything, you start to learn how the program thinks, right? Because there's sort of an overarching concept in terms of how things are put together. And that was always one of the problems with Logic when eMagic had it, was it was as if it had been written by 10 people who never talked to each other.
It's so true.
You'd have to learn how the environment worked, which had nothing to do with how the notation worked. And all of the units within it were incredible. But to get your brain around how it worked was almost impossible. Whereas with Pro Tools, from very early on, you kind of figured out its little paradigm of how to deal with audio, which was very much based on tape and mixers. So you sort of knew it already.
No, it's true.
And you would be working and say, oh, I bet there's a way to do this, and I bet it's over in this menu. And 80% of the time, you were right. And you would just do it, and you could learn it quickly to get work done. And then you can go back and reread the manual and learn shortcuts and power stuff and whatever. But you could get work done immediately. You didn't have to learn a new way to think about audio versus MIDI. Like, the stuff was just there.
That's true.
You hit play. It worked. It looked like stuff. You could saw exactly what you heard. And that's why it took over, because it was actually good.
Yeah.
And to be fair, you know, people are probably already writing their comments about, well, you can make records in Logic, because I said I couldn't. I mean, I said I couldn't. If I spend enough time with any of the other DAWs, I'd probably figure out how they think.
Right.
But that's that takes a couple of years
at least.
And
that's true.
To me, that's why I switched to Pro Tools almost immediately when I started using it, because it made perfect sense.
I think also, too, is the fact that Pro Tools, you know, in the early stages of Pro Tools, they were really post-friendly when a lot of DAWs were strictly still music. I mean, they took time code in consideration, and they had things like pull-ups and pull-downs, things that at that time you really needed, especially when you were working, you know, 24 frames and you had 3997 sessions. And
well,
and,
the high-end boxes did that pretty well too, but most of the other consumer stuff did.
Yeah, that's the thing. And at that time, like you said, Pro Tools was the cheap alternative.
Well, and their advantage, which was what people hated about them, is that they had their own hardware.
Right.
So instead of having to figure out how you can get hardware that will let Nuendo do all of the amazing stuff it does, you take your Digi system out of the box and you stick it in your computer, and you get exactly what they say you're going to get.
Yeah, that's
true. You used to have to hook your hard drives up to their cards.
Yeah.
But that's because they knew if you did that, you were going to get the number of tracks that they had promised.
Most of the time. I mean, even back then,
you
still fought with bugs.
Because of fades, you know, and things like that. But it was – that's why. And they managed to do it at a price point that made sense at the time. And
you know what's funny? The big systems – I was real involved with Waveframe by the time Pro Tools was coming around. And the big systems, Waveframe and – Fairlight and Synclavier, and actually Studer Diaxis, which I ended up having to spend a few nightmarish years with. Thank you, Stevie, for that. Had to learn that thing. We did a whole album with it and never turned it on again, but it sounded great. Anywho, one of the things that all these big systems used to say about Pro Tools was that Pro Tools was a hodgepodge of hardware. Like, if you wanted time code, you had to get a slave driver. And if you had – that's what – or the universal slave driver is what it's called, right?
Yeah.
And if you wanted I.O., you needed this box. Or if you wanted I, you needed this box. If you wanted O, you needed this box. Whatever. When you put together a Pro Tools rig, it was like a rack full of boxes, and it was so unseemly to have all these little modules. Whereas with Synclav and Waveframe and stuff, you'd get these giant refrigerator-sized boxes that had everything built into one box. And that used to be a point of snobbery. Like, they would say, well, why would you want to have to mix and match all these little pieces? Turns out.
Because you could.
Because you could, and because that way you could have a customized system and save a ton of money.
And you only buy what you need.
Yeah. It actually made sense for many, 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 many different reasons. But there was a backlash against it. It's really funny to think back to those
days. Well, that's because, like I said, they had the Ferrari mentality and they were stuck in that mentality. And it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I mean, because I've worked for New England Digital. Not right at the end, but close to it. And they did not see it coming.
Not at all.
Which it means that they're just complete idiots, basically. Because you couldn't not see it coming.
Right.
But they would see the two-channel sound tool systems and go,
it's a toy.
That's a child's toy.
Yeah.
You know what, though? But New England Digital did come out. You know, they did realize the Synclavier was too expensive for some users. So they did come out with their low-cost option.
The 3200.
The 3200.
Yes.
And it cost $80,000.
Yeah, and it was in a little droid-sized rack. We called them all R2-D2s.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, hey, listen, we're gonna take a break.
Thanks,
fun.
Shannon.
Thanks, Shannon. Right to Andrew. He defended Pro Tools way more than I did today.
I hate Pro Tools.
All right, we're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this thing with Shannon in just one point that he brought up that I want to ask you guys about. So we're not quite over the Shannon response. All right. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were basically reaming Shannon on his response.
No, we were not.
No,
Mike was during the break, though. Holy cow.
I'm just kidding. Actually, you know, we've got some really smart listeners. I mean, real smart listeners. And Shannon's one of them. And a couple of the other guys who've posted on Facebook for a couple of things and some of the emails they get. Just, man, I am impressed how much smarter they are than me. Which is not too hard. Hey, but one of the things that Shannon said, and this will be the last time I reference this response, but I wanted to...
Yeah, this is the Shannon show now.
That's right.
That's good.
But he said this one little statement. You guys sometimes seem really sheltered. And I was thinking about that because when you work a certain way, and when you work as much as a lot of us work, you know, sometimes we can be sheltered in certain things, you know. And what I wanted to ask you guys is, how do you keep yourself from being sheltered? How do you keep yourself, you know, fresh and keeping things, you know, moving? I mean, do you make a conscious effort to try new things? Do you like ever make a conscious effort to like, hey, I'm not going to use the AMS reverb, or hey, I'm not going to do this, or do you always have your same tool sets that you always bring up?
I have no idea what he means by that, really. I mean, we all are very creative, doing things right differently every single time and coming up with new sound all the time.
Right.
And, I'm not sure that's what sheltered means, though. I just don't know what that means. I don't know any group of people who experiments more with the gear and stays more on top of the new stuff than this panel.
Well, no, that I totally agree. But how do you keep up? I mean, do you ever just like purposely force yourself to do certain new things?
Or every
you just,
day,
you just
every single day. I did today. I did.
What about you, Andrew?
I mean, it depends. Sometimes
just because you
to
have tricks doesn't mean you're
right. No, I mean, sometimes I just need to get work done. So then I will go back to the things I know really well, which is Pro Tools with my console, and I know what gear will work on certain things. But, I mean, a perfect example is my label put out a record called Low Roar, which was this guy who did a record by himself in his apartment on GarageBand. And then we started collaborating. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to take this out to the studio. I'm going to import everything into Logic because Logic can read GarageBand files, and then I can send it back to him and he'll actually be able to continue working in GarageBand. So I forced myself to learn Logic well enough to do an entire record in Logic. So, okay, I'm sheltered in terms of I would choose to use Pro Tools most of the time. And no, I haven't taken the time to try and make a record on Cubase or Nuendo, and I'm sure you could. But I think when you read the whole thing in context, I kind of knew what he was talking about, but I'm forgetting now. So I don't want to, you know.
Well, he was talking about that, you know, since we were making all kinds of oohs and ahs about some of the new features, he says you guys sometimes seem really sheltered. 32-bit floating point and 64-bit mix engines have been out for several years.
Okay.
Insinuating that, you know, we build up these little fortresses around the way we work and what we work with. And I totally disagree. Non-sheltered people, but
I think this goes more to actually something I was saying during the break, which was that at some point you need to stop worrying about who had what feature when and things like that, and just concentrate on, if you're making records, making records. And if you decide that Pro Tools is not the best way for you to make records, then stop using it and figure out a way that you can transfer stuff back and forth. Even if you're actually printing things, make records the best way for you to make records. And don't worry about who had 32-point and 64-bit engines. And because for me, not having 32-bit float mixer and a 64-bit engine has not stopped me from making records ever. And I don't know that it's going to help me make records. So in some ways, I really just couldn't care less. What does help me work is the fact that I tracked an entire record in 2.5 days last week and this week with a bunch of mics on the drums and bass, live vocal, click, some other stuff going on. And with the new disc caching, I was able to put together drum comps in seconds, where otherwise it would take me a long time because I'm recording at 9624. You're waiting for hard drives. I probably would have split the tracks between two drives while recording, but the RAM caching actually helps while recording. So your track count goes way up for that. So in that way, Pro Tools 10 really helped me work and make music. And I just want the stuff to get out of the way and not think about it.
Yeah.
And it helped me do that. So yeah, I'm sheltered in that I haven't tried every single thing out there ever. But every time anyone tells me, oh man, this thing's super cool, I absolutely check it out and try it, whether it's a plugin or a DAW or whatever.
It sounds like, from when you read his comment in context, it sounds like he was suggesting that the panel was sheltered, not realizing that some of these things have been around for a long time.
Right.
And I think if you listen to all 112 podcasts, not that I'd sentence anyone to do that, but you'd hear, actually, this panel has always talked about things like that. It's just maybe in that one discussion it didn't get covered.
But the reality is Pro Tools is that ubiquitous, especially if you're doing music. So you have to live in that world. You can't keep just wishing it was different somehow, but then continuing to use it. Either change your world and do something else, or accept it enough where you're just not angry about it. You know.
Yeah. No, and the fact of the matter is, if you're going to make a living doing this, you're going to be spending a ton of money on – you can't be sheltered, because you know what? The guy next to you isn't sheltered, and he's going to be trying the latest and greatest. And you always got to stay on your game. You always have to be on top of it if you want to keep moving forward. When I mix, I'm under no delusion that I am the world's greatest mixer and no one will be able to catch up with me in post-production. As a matter of fact, I'm the total opposite. I feel like I have a pressure on myself always to – I'm running this race, and I always want to keep my sprint up, and I always want to keep going. That's why I always look at all the latest plugins, and I literally own all the DAWs that are out there, even open source ones. And I always try everything out, because if for not any other thing, that somewhere down the road someone's going to bring me a project where they did something, and I just want to be familiar with it enough that I can work with it.
But at the end of the day, you're just trying to be the best mixer you can possibly be. And whichever tool you happen to go back to when it's your choice, well, who cares what that is?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, one of the things we've talked about a bunch on this as well is all of this is really interesting and really fun and all of that. But at the end of the day, it comes out of some speakers. And it's what you hear is all that matters. So just try and get back to that. And if Shannon hates using Pro Tools and wants to work on a different platform, then figure out a way to do it. Because if that's like musically and creatively what works for him and that's what makes the music better, then by all means.
I would venture, I would also say that if you work on something other than Pro Tools and you work on it and you learn it and you know how to do it really well, that could actually give you an edge over some other people, especially if it does certain features that Pro Tools doesn't do.
Yeah, absolutely.
That can actually work to your favor. Unfortunately, I'm in a situation where I have to work on Pro Tools, and you know what? I like Pro Tools. I like the way the editor is. I like it. But I'll tell you what, having the familiarity with all the other DAWs and with all the other programs, from Reason to Live to, a bunch of them, one of the cool things about staying up with technology is you really, not only do you get to know the differences in the way they work, but you also get to know the differences in the way they sound. And let me tell you, not all these DAWs, they don't all sound alike. Different mix engines sound absolutely different. Especially, back in the days of like Reason, 1.0 and 2.0, it was a cool program that had a great interface, but it did not sound that great. It was not a good sounding engine together. Now, I tell you, the latest version with Record and everything sounds a lot better. But, you notice these things when you get to be familiar with all the other, gear that's out there. And, notice that nobody ever said that Pro Tools in the early days was that great sounding, because it really wasn't.
And it wasn't about that.
Right, exactly. So all that to say is, just keep moving and keep learning, keep moving. Just use whatever tool you're going to use. And we're not sheltered.
I don't think so.
All right. So then we're gonna put that to side. So It's probably the last post Shannon will ever do.
No, because he knows we can, can steer a whole show towards his concerns, which is fine.
It's great that someone listens and cares that much.
Like I said, we've got some brilliant guys out there that are listening to the show. All right, so I want to move on. Before we end the show, I wanted to let people know that this will be our Christmas show, our holiday show.
Is this a war on Hanukkah?
I said our Hanukkah show, our Christmas, Hanukkah.
Kwanzaa? What's got a problem with Kwanzaa?
This will be the show of
holidays.
There you go.
December-based holidays.
And because it is that, I want to give the listeners a little gift. And I want you guys to think of a little tidbit, a little nugget that we can leave with the listeners as a little audio gift. What is a good little hint, a good little tip, a good little box, a good little something that you would like to share with us for this holiday season?
I can't tell you how happy I am that you didn't give us a heads up on this, so we have to think of it on
the spot. That's great. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah.
All I want for Christmas is a heads up when you're going to give us questions like that.
Well, I think we'll start with Mike.
Yeah, Mike. Give us your top five.
My top five? Yeah. We're going to start with Jeremy.
Listen to the podcast. That's my there
you
go.
You know what? I'll say we did, in the last 15 or 20 years, one of the shows we did was about what would we suggest as a gift for someone at the holidays? And I liked what I pulled out of thin air back then, and I want to put it out there again because I really still think it's probably the coolest gift you could get someone, and that is a lesson on their instrument from a great teacher. Because nothing matters as well as you play your instrument if you're doing music, and nothing will improve your product as well as learning to play your instrument better. And all of this Pro Tools and Workstation talk pales in comparison to coming up with a better melody or playing your instrument better. So I'll still go there. I don't know if that's answering your question, but
That's a nice little nugget. That's a nice little one. I wish you would have, you just re-gifted us, basically.
That's true. Is that the brother little, what was that? I can't remember on Seinfeld. It's a little label maker, I seem to remember. I'm not going next, Mike.
I'll go next.
All right.
And I talked about this on the last podcast, but I want to reiterate it one more time. I think the coolest plugin that's come by in a long time has to be Slate Digital's VCC. That's just phenomenal. If you want to change the overall character and quality of your mixes in one easy swoop, invest in that plugin. It's not that expensive. It's like $300 or so.
$250.
And what does it do, to recap?
It's essentially, it emulates a Neve, an API. It emulates some of these vintage consoles. And what you do is you put a plugin across the channels that you want to run through it, and then you put a master bus plugin on your master bus. And it kind of emulates the summing, for lack of a better word, summing the character of that console on the output. And it's pretty amazing. It really does make a difference. And it's more than an EQ change. It's just the character of your mix kind of changes. And have you worked with it at all?
I haven't, no.
I'd be curious to see, because since you have the Neve, because I've heard the API, and the API is actually pretty good, but I'm not as familiar with the Neve. So I'd be curious to see what you thought, if you ever...
Well, when I get it from you for the holidays, I'll check it out.
But it really is. It's for $250. It's a pretty phenomenal plugin, and it really does. It just changes things. It just EQ openness, the spread of the mix itself. It just changes the character of the mix. That's about the only thing I can tell you. But I just want to tell you that's a great place to go if you want to do something a little different. Although it will not solve your problem. If you have a muddy mix and you put this thing
on, it's going to get muddier.
It's just going to be a really vintage sounding muddy. But
old mud.
It's going to sound like old mud, but it's actually, that would be my, if you had $300, $250, $300 plus tax, that would be a good place to go if you want to change your sound.
Mm-hmm. Or you can buy a third of a Pro Tools upgrade.
Yeah. All right, well, staying in the plugin realm, mm-hmm. I would say anything from Massey, any of the Massey plugins, because they're super cheap. I mean, I think they're $50 each or something. I mean, But the ones that I like the most for that sort of coloration thing, he's got a tape head plugin that he's had for a while that's really, really good. There's also, I believe it's called DRT. He's had a few different versions of it. He's the guy who developed the TL drum rehab plugin that almost worked, that Avid then took over when TL Labs was bought out by Digi. I think it was still at the time. Mm-hmm. But he has an engine for drum replacement where it will analyze a drum track and generate MIDI that will be sample accurate to trigger anything. I mean, you can put, you could replace the MIDI with actual, you know, regions and on the audio track, or you can have it trigger battery or whatever you want to do. And it takes seconds, and it is amazing. So that will say, if you ever have to do drum replacement, that will save you hours and hours and hours.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's DRT. Are you on the Massey site? Yeah, Massey DRT. So
nice. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Came up with something.
That was good. Jeremy, what about you?
Well, I actually just bought something that I really like. I don't know if I can, like, I don't have enough experience as the two across the table. So I actually just bought the Channel G from McDSP.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And that has some standard music and some standard post settings for five-band EQ with filters and compressor expander. And it has, so it has music post and then, like, API Neve and SSL 2 models or something. And that's great. I use the Audio Suite EQ sometimes for doing sound effects, and then I have the actual channel on some personal mixes and stuff. And the whole thing is really well put together, and it's a little simpler than their filter bank, compressor bank stuff. And I think it has just as many options. So
they're slowly taking over the world with that stuff. It's becoming very popular. It's been out for a while, but it's, you see it popping up more and more on places where you wouldn't. You didn't used to see a lot of McDSP stuff.
Right. No, that's true. And also, you know, you think people, I think, just like anything else, you know, things come in and out of fashion. And for a long time, people were on the Waves bandwagon. I still love Waves. But every once in a while, you just kind of want to try something else and go down another little path. And McDSP has always been really reliable and has really good sounding stuff.
Yeah, and the UAD stuff is pretty incredible, too.
Yeah, UAD is really cool.
Can I give a non-software
one? Sure, yeah. No, no, anything. Tips, right. Tricks.
This one, it's a little more. I think it's in the between $300 and $400. I don't remember because I bought it a few months ago. But the Ekdahl Moisturizer. It's this guy. I can't remember his first name, but Ekdahl. E-K-D-A-H-L, I believe. And he builds these things, and it's in a project box. It's a spring reverb with the spring literally on top of the box. And it's also got this crazy built-in filter with LFOs and lots of control inputs, so you can put in a voltage control from a modular or have it control things and stuff. But just as a mono spring reverb with some really cool filter effects for a little tabletop box, it's amazing.
Nice.
It sounds great.
That's awesome. What's it called?
The Ekdahl Moisturizer.
And it is $300.
$300. And, so and the, cool. The labeling on the knobs, like the instead of having dry to wet, like the reverb is from none to soup. And input is from none to distorted. And all it's a very funny box, but it sounds great. Really, really good.
And what would you use it on?
I've used it on all kinds of stuff. I mean, one of the things I used it on recently, which was very cool, is we did some pump organ drones. Some really kind of deep, reedy, low octave stuff, and did three passes through this, doing the filter manually kind of as we went through the course of a song, and made sort of an LCR reverb to go with this crazy pump organ. And it just, nothing else sounds like it. Because I'm really into spring reverbs lately anyway, but it's really cool.
Really? How come? You just
the Adele record.
Really?
I was trying to find a reverb that I could put on these mixes where it would add the space that you wanted to add with the reverb, but you wouldn't hear it as reverb. And I tried a lot of room simulators, and they all just sounded a little bit fake, and the spring reverb ended up being the thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Talk about moving forward by stepping back a little bit.
And I would also recommend a plugin for that is the Soft Tube Spring Reverb.
I was about to say that. Have you tried
it? It's got two knobs and two sliders, and the coolest thing that – I mean, the thing I love doing with it is instead of having a stereo one of it, you do multi-mono, because that way you can place the reverb exactly in the stereo spread. If you've got a guitar hard left,
right,
but send it to the input that's on the right of your multi-mono spring, the spring is only on the right. And so you can sort of do a double of your guitar that's nothing but spring reverb, or place the reverb exactly where the guitar is, but there's no spring anywhere else.
Right.
So it's very, very cool.
That's cool.
I would also say, I was going to say that too, the spring reverb from Softube is really cool. And actually, they're amp simulators too. If you haven't played with their different amp simulators.
Yeah, guitar amp room and bass amp room.
Yeah, they're inexpensive and they're really, really good. And you can position the mic in front of the speaker where you want it, and it's really good stuff.
So there you go. So now we've covered most of Hanukkah at this
point. Yeah.
There we go. Well, hey, listen, we're going to be wrapping it up.
Oh, I'll give you one other thing. Any virtual instrument that Rob Papin has come out with is good.
Yeah. That's true.
That's an easy one.
That's an easy one.
For anyone looking for instruments.
All right, but you know what? Before we end, I got to ask you, since there's one thing that Andrew, Rob, and myself share in common, is that we all went through the boot camp known as the Steve Lynn Morris camp, which we've all worked with Stevie Wonder. And really quick, give me your favorite, your best tour memory, Andrew, with Stevie Wonder.
I was being on the side of the stage watching Rob play trigger some of the sound effect things. I don't even remember exactly what it was, but with his nose. Yeah. Because I had challenged him to do it. Yes. And he actually did it.
I can tell you what it was. It was the timpani part from That Girl.
There you go. Okay.
Not that I remember it or anything.
No. But my favorite moment was I didn't work with Stevie nearly as long as Rob certainly, and or as you, but my favorite moment was the tour that I was on was the Natural Wonder Tour, which is a European tour, where we picked up a local orchestra in every town, and watching all of the people in the string section on the songs that they weren't playing on is one of the greatest things I've ever seen, because they were all so happy to be. I mean, they'd be up during Superstition. They were just dancing. Most of them would be standing up, running around all over the place. They just couldn't believe how cool it was.
Yeah, so that was awesome.
That's cool. Rob, what about you? Well, you probably have so many, but what's one that sticks out?
That's a tough one. I guess if I had to pick, well, when I first started with him, basically I started, my first studio experience with him was him basically saying, hey, I have this song we got to cut. There's a thing in the other room called a synclavier. Go learn how to use it. And just, I got thrown in to just having to figure this thing out overnight. And the manual was like 8 feet wide. You know, it was like a whole wall full. There was no one there. And I just kind of dove in. And that was like a life-changing moment, because all of a sudden I went from some knucklehead kid who wanted to work with Stevie someday to all of a sudden now it's my responsibility to figure out how to make this song happen. So that was cool. I think for a live thing, it has to be the tour we did in Brunei.
Yeah, that was
pretty
cool.
I did hundreds and hundreds of shows with him, but we did some shows in Brunei for the Sultan's family, and it was like being on a different planet.
It was.
And you were there for that.
That was pretty amazing.
That was probably the most extreme, crazy thing.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty extreme. I've got two, and the first one was, I'll never forget the very first rehearsal that I was at when Stevie walked in the very first time. By then I had worked with tons of different artists, but he was the only artist that I was like, it was the hair on the back of my neck was like standing up. I was so just in awe when he sat down there and started playing. It was amazing, because it's like, here's this living legend and he starts playing. You know, I don't even remember what the first four songs were, because I was just in awe of just being there and with the whole band and everything. It was just amazing. And the second memory, and actually this is probably my number one, was when we were in Brunei, and he was playing Isn't She Lovely. My daughter was born, I was on the road at the time, and my daughter was born that night when we played the first show. And I'll never forget, I just found out I was a father for the first time, and then I had to go do the show, and then he's playing Isn't She Lovely, and it was just totally emotional. It was like,
wow.
It was pretty amazing. It was really amazing. And at that time, you know, I had to go because it was my job, that's what I did, and you know, here was getting into Stevie's camp was really important. And my wife, you know, the baby was late. She goes, no, go ahead and go. We had plenty of family. So I'm not that big of an ogre.
No. And of course, this is pre-Skype and pre-all of
that. Yeah. It was.
And there was really no bigger tour to be
no,
on.
No, you couldn't.
That
was like
the biggest ever.
Exactly. And in that camp, you know, once they pass you by, it's like trying to jump on a jet after it left the runway, you know?
By,
like,
by the way, my guess is, to use a George W. Bush term, I think you may be misremembering your first thing, because my guess is that he came into the rehearsal room and the hair stood up on the back of your neck and he sat down and got on his cell phone.
No.
I don't ever remember him walking into rehearsal and getting to work.
That was the second one. No, he did. We were over at what was the place in Burbank over by the airport?
Third Encore.
Oh, Third Encore. We're over at Third Encore. And he came right in and sat down. I was sitting right next to Larry and when he walked in, and I was just nervous. I didn't know what to do with myself. It was crazy. I was nervous. You know? I was nervous for a couple of reasons, because he walked in, and second of all, I was thinking, I wonder if I'm a dad yet. It's like, well, what am I going to do? You know, because George Packard was the production manager at that time. And I was thinking, man, I hope if my wife goes into labor, I hope I can leave and not get fired. George will be right back. I'm going to go have a kid.
Amazing.
It all worked out. Anyhow, well, we'll have to wrap this up. But what do you think, Julie? Did you learn anything new?
Oh, lots of stuff.
And none of it good.
Jeremy.
Yeah.
Thanks for sitting in, buddy.
Yeah. I got to, like, say things.
Hey, I got it. You know what? Jeremy does an amazing job. He edits and he records all these podcasts, and really, we could not do it without Jeremy. So I'm going to thank you, Jeremy.
And he's like the stat guy in the booth, too.
He is.
I was thinking he's sort of like our Siri. Whenever we need something, call out his name and get an answer.
I'm glad you're sitting out here, because you do an awesome job, and I really appreciate it. And it's not just the holiday season talking right now either.
Well, and now that they've just invented screen sharing, he can sit out here all the time.
I know.
You're a sheltered man.
I know. All right. Well, before we go, Rob, are you working on anything you can talk about?
I'm actually working on a few things that I can't talk about the details of, but I'm actually working with Mr. Gershon, who couldn't be here tonight. But we're working on a trailer together, and coming up soon, a video game together. So all of a sudden, I mean, I've known him for like, I don't know, 22, 23 years, but we're finally actually doing a few projects together.
That's so funny, because I'm working on a trailer with him.
I know
also.
You are.
That's hilarious.
I know you are.
Maybe it's the same trailer.
It is not. I know for a fact it is not. But it's actually cool, because I'm writing a bunch of music, and that's always fun.
Great. What about you, my friend?
A little bit of work here and there, but mostly it's all about the label. So go to tonequake.com. And buy records. No, but I pick up vinyl on Friday, which I'm very excited about.
Vinyl?
Yeah, yeah. Pressed it as a double album. It was a little bit too long to fit on one, so we did a three-sided record. And side four is the single at 45 RPM. So you get a 12-inch single, because it's an edit. It's a different edit that isn't on the record.
Wow,
so
that's pretty cool.
So it's
kind of cool. That is cool.
So it's exciting. So my house will be full of them unless people buy them.
So one more time. Tell the
Tonequake.com.
Tonequake.com.
Yeah. And the artist is Low Roar. And the video just got premiered a couple of days ago, so it's out on YouTube and the web and stuff. So check it out.
And it is a very good-sounding album. I have heard it.
How many artists do you have? Is this the first one?
Well, this is the first release, but there's another release that'll be happening in January, because I'm distributing two artists from Switzerland whose albums I worked on, and one of those is coming out the end of January, and then the other one a couple months after that. And then I've got a couple other things burbling around, but if you want to lose money fast, start a label. That's my advice.
Jeremy, what about you? I know you're always working on fun and interesting little projects.
Well, I have no idea what I can talk about, so I'm going to go with, like, only the safest stuff. So I can only say two things. I am for the first time, cutting actual hard effects, sound effects like doors opening and cars and that sort of fun stuff, after probably 9 or 10 months of cutting only mostly backgrounds for a feature film that actually got bought 2 days ago.
Nice.
So maybe on the next podcast
Great.
I can say something. But the other thing that I can talk about a lot is that me and my friend Sam have been practicing field recording, basically. I don't know if we're going to be able to use any of it at all, but we found some broken TVs of the really heavy tube kind, and we took them out to the desert and we threw them off of a van. So that was great fun. I learned a lot, which was, of course, the whole point. And I think I maybe saved about 4 audio files. So it was a good learning experience.
And, actually, of course, you cleaned up after yourself.
Of course I did. Yeah. No, actually, I did because we were on a campground. So okay, I was actually responsible.
Wait, you threw the TVs off the back of the truck?
Yeah. We wanted to get higher because, to be totally honest, they're quite heavy.
Right.
And so we didn't feel safe just lifting probably 10 TVs over one of our heads and hoping they fell in the right place. Right. So I have a tall van, and we got on top of it and threw the TVs off of the van into the little sort of pit thing that we made, and, you know, with microphones that we felt safe that if we destroyed them that it wouldn't be too much of a problem.
Wait, is this when you borrowed my microphones?
No. This was like 57s and my microphones, and so nothing expensive.
So the van was stationary and you just dropped it.
Yeah, no, we weren't driving.
that's all my mind was like, you're in the back of your van, you're pushing it off, and it's like,
No. We just needed a platform of some kind to get up a little higher to hopefully make a little more noise, make more things break. But it was a learning experience, which was of the best kind because it was a lot of fun. So hopefully I'm better at field recording loud things in the future.
Nice.
That's a cool thing. I actually remember in the old days, Scott Gershon's company used to throw stuff off the roof of their building and record the
regularly
the impacts.
And I had a giant old NEC TV. It was like a 36-inch tube, you know, that weighed a ton. And I actually gave it to them, and they were going to throw it off the roof. I don't know if they ever did, but they used to block out the whole parking lot in the back. It's like a, I don't know, 7-8 story building, maybe a little taller.
Wow!
But you get good recordings, but it's not safe. People, be careful.
Oh, yeah, eye protection. I actually want to say safety message. Eye protection is really important, even when you're on the top of the van, because when things explode, you can't really control where they go.
Funny how that works.
Great.
And you, Mike?
Well, I'm working on a trailer with Scott, which is going to be really fun. We mix in about 2 weeks, so that'll be fun.
So and on Christmas Day.
No, the deadline is like right before Christmas, so that last
on
week.
On Christmas Day. We all know how that works.
We sure do.
No, it's not, by golly. And then I'm, for the first time in like 10 years, I'm taking a break during the holidays. So I'm actually taking like 12 days off, so it'll be pretty cool not to have to do anything during that time. And then also I'm prepping for the NAMM show. And helping the API guys put together a nice little rig to show off the 1608 with the automation running a DAW. So that'll be kind of cool, which is – it's phenomenal. It's like once they put automation in that 1608, it just totally changes it, just makes it
– They've had automation for years, man.
No, but in the 1608. It's not like screen sharing, okay?
I'm just joking.
well, hey, listen, if you have any comments or questions, feel free to send them to us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Or you can post them on Facebook. That's facebook.com/audio nowcast. And you never know when we'll do a whole show about your comments.
Yeah, I was going to say, or you could just send them to Shannon. He's got the direct pipeline. He can filter it out and send it to us.
No, but I want to thank those guys. I want to thank Shannon for posting. And, you know, the good thing about, you know, the Facebook page is you can post anything you want. And actually, the more passion you have for something, you know, post it. Because, you know, I would rather see a bunch of comments that don't agree with us and are passionate about it, because that's how we all learn. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm always right. Rob may always be right, but I'm
no,
not.
I say Mike is always right.
I'm usually wrong.
All right. Well, that's it. That went really fast, the whole what are you working on, because we're used to doing for like, you know, 9 people sitting around the table.
Yeah. The funny thing, because we are a little before the holidays, the holiday time is a crazy time in the industry, at least in L.A. I mean, everybody has these crazy deadlines. There's usually one before Thanksgiving, but before Christmas, everybody has to get everything done as if there's not going to be, you know, planet Earth after New Year's Day or something. Everything has to be done before Christmas.
According to the Mayans, there's not going to be.
Well, true. It's incredible the way that sort of artificial line in the sand affects budgets and schedules and everything else.
Yeah. But. Well, it's tax years. you know.
Yeah, that too.
Hey, I also want to thank Julie for sitting in with us.
Yeah, thanks Julie, for having me.
Yeah, what are you doing these days there, Julie?
I'm working with Mike at some stuff.
We're so sorry.
It's not that bad, really.
No,
once you get kind of numb to it.
Oh, this will be fun. All right. Well, hey, I just want to wish everybody out there happy holidays. And for myself and everybody here, be safe. And we will see you next time.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.